We'll see the word-to-word translation, translation and purports by the humble disciples of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Word-to-word translation, Anurmi Matvam, being undisturbed by hunger, thirst, etc. Dehespin, in this body. Dura, things very far away. Shravana, hearing. Darshanam, and seeing. Manajava, moving the body at the speed of the mind. Kamarupam, assuming any body that one desires. Parakaya, the bodies of others. Praveshanam, entering. We'll read a translation and then the purport also. Translation. The 10 secondary mystic perfections arising from the modes of nature are as follows. The powers of freeing oneself from hunger, thirst and other bodily disturbances. Second, hearing things far away. Third, seeing things far away. Fourth, moving the body at the speed of the mind. Fifth, assuming any form one desires. Sixth, entering the bodies of others. Seventh, dying when one desires. Eighth, witnessing the pastimes between the demigods and the celestial girls called apsaras. Ninth, completely executing one's determination. And tenth, giving orders whose fulfillment is unimpeded. Text number 8 and 9. Trikala gyatvam advandvam parachittadi abhigyata agni arkambu vishadinam pratishtambho parajaya etas choddeshatah prokta yoga dharana siddhayah yaya dharanaya yasyad yathavasya nibodhame. Translation. Now these are another 5 mystic perfections. The power to know past, present and future. Tolerance of heat, cold and other dualities. Knowing the minds of others. Checking the influence of fire, sun, water, poison and so on. And fifth is remaining unconquered by others. These constitute 5 perfections of the mystic process of yoga and meditation. I am simply listing these here according to their names and characteristics. Now please learn from me how specific mystic perfections arise from specific meditations and also of the particular processes involved. So from shloka number 10 onwards, which will be discussed tomorrow onwards, Lord Krishna will mention specific processes to develop all of these perfections. Example, just for example, shloka number 10 translation is, one who worships me in my atomic form, pervading all subtle elements, fixing his mind on that alone, obtains the mystic perfection called anima. And then every shloka has each mystic perfection. Purport of the current shlokas. According to the acharyas, these 5 perfections are considered to be quite inferior to the others already mentioned, since they involve more or less ordinary physical and mental manipulations. According to Srila Madhvacharya, in the perfection called Agni Arkambu Vishadinam Pratishtambha, or checking the influence of fire, sun, water, poison and so on, the term and so on refers to one's remaining invulnerable to all types of weapons as well as attacks by nails, teeth, beating, curses and other such sources. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupah Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shriyuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrinda Vaneshwari Vrishabhano Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna, we are grateful to the devotees for giving us a chance to speak on Srimad Bhagavatam. Since we are talking about mystic perfections, it's very interesting that I'm not sitting on my usual place here on the Vyasasan with folded legs. I'm sitting here on a chair for a reason. I have some sprain in my foot and I cannot have any mystic perfections to neglect that pain, to tolerate that pain, and I can sit cross-legged. So there's a good sense of humor of our organizers that somebody who does not have any mystic perfection, who does not have any tolerance of pain, is given a shloka where what is being discussed is how some people are eager for mystic perfections and they can tolerate heat, cold, pain, effect of poison, weapons, curses, subtle weapons, and so on. So are these mystic perfections really necessary? We'll just discuss a little bit on this. Actually, if you see, in the world around us, we have miracles every day. Because if you see somebody walking on a ray of sunlight, which is one of the mystic perfections, it's a miracle. Prabhupada would mention of how in his childhood he had come across somebody who would just stretch out his hand and bring pomegranates from Afghanistan. They are the best ones. So you just stretch out his hand and take a pomegranate from Afghanistan. Prabhupada would mention how some yogis, they bathe in the most prominent oceans every day. They take a dip in one place, and when they come out of water, they are in another holy place. Then they take a dip in that holy place, then they come out in another place. So there are people like that. One person who visits Kumbh Mela is coming up very soon. He mentioned all the Naga Babas who are doing a lot of tapasya in the Himalayas. Several of them, they come to the Kumbh Mela. They stay there. And then they leave. But the observation is, nobody sees them coming by trains. You see Hare Krishna devotees traveling by trains. They're doing a lot of kirtan. That's how you identify Hare Krishna devotees are traveling in a train. But the observation is, all these Nagababas, nobody sees them traveling. Nobody sees them walking on roads because they're huge. There are a lot of people. It's not a small group. So when they walk, you know, they create a lot of air around them. They're proud of their renunciation. They have all these trishuls, tridents. So you can't neglect them. They walk together. They have a group feeling. So when they are traveling by foot, they are traveling by train. They don't have money to travel by planes. Somebody should notice them, but nobody notices them. They don't see them coming and they don't see them going. In the Girnar area of Gujarat, there are some yogis who stay there, who have such long hair and who have such long nails even today. They say for this nail to grow, their age cannot be less than 200, 250. The length of the nails is so much, they don't speak about themselves. But some inference we can draw. Around 2005, 2006, there was one news article about one sadhu. His name is Prahlad Jani. Even today he stays near Ahmedabad. Near Ahmedabad there is a place called Ambaji. All the Gujarati people, on every Purnima, they'll go to Ambaji. There's a place connected to Durga Devi. So this sadhu called Prahlad Jani, he's staying there and he has a mystic perfection. So it seems they did tests on him in 2005 and also they repeated some tests in 2010. And they found out there is not a single grain that he has eaten and not a single drop of water that he has drunk for the last 46 years. Last 46 years, no grains and no water. And they actually put him in confinement. And they sealed the place where you evacuate. He could not even use it, even if, you know, he's faking. So he didn't take anything, he didn't leave anything. And then he was asked, can you share? Because, you know, the nature of the modern world is, they want to use all these mystic perfections for their own nefarious purposes. So the army got a little bit interested. If it's a trick, our soldiers, when they go out for fighting, and if there's no food, no water, probably we could learn and do what we want to do. So they wanted him to share. So you know what he mentioned? It was publicly documented. He said, there is a hole in my palate. In the upper part, there is a hole. And he says, Goddess Durga supplies me nutrition through the hole in that palate. And actually they found out there is a hole in his palate. And they said, the scientists are saying, this is the only specimen where you find a hole in the palate. You cannot have a hole in your palate. So all these things keep on happening. But apart from these kind of miracles, which has many of you all ears, you want to listen. Aur kya hai? Is there any other story like this? One time His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj was mentioning how, actually around us there are so many miracles happening. The sun rising every day is a miracle. You plant a seed, and from that seed comes a plant. And on that plant there are many flowers, and in each of those flowers there are these tiny seeds, and in each of those tiny seeds there is a scope for a plant to grow again. You plant one grain of rice, and from there comes a plant on which there are probably more than 1,000 grains of rice, each one potent to again produce a plant, and so on. If you see butterflies, so beautiful. Just now when I was coming, I was traveling and I saw near KEM hospital, they had put up a board. They're saying, blood cannot be manufactured, please donate blood. This is a blood donation drive, they want people to donate. We admit, the best hospital in Bombay admits, we cannot manufacture blood. This fluid that is flowing all over our bodies, we cannot manufacture it, so they are encouraging people. Basically what they are admitting is their helplessness. So all these are miracles. But for those of us who fail to admit, acknowledge the daily miracles that keep on happening every moment, the sun sets, the sun rises, the moon rises, all the planetary systems are going on in perfect orbits without ever intercepting each other. This is a miracle. But those of us, because these miracles keep happening every day, so no longer they are miracles for us. Something that happens every day, which is extraordinary, but we take it for granted. So then we need all these small miracles, tiny miracles. So are these miracles of any use? Are these mystic perfections of any use? In South India, in the disciplic line of Srila Madhvacharya, There is one very famous saintly person called Srila Raghavendra Swami. Sometimes when we go to South India, there is a station, railway station called Mantralayam. So in this Mantralayam, there is a big mutt where he used to stay. And he is famous especially for dovetailing mystic perfections in the form of miracles to attract people to the power of God. So many of these modern mystic people, they show their mystic perfections, they flaunt them, not to attract people through them to God, but they want to attract people to themselves. I read one quote somewhere, please live your life in such a way that people who don't know God but know you want to know about God because they know you. Because you are an exemplary person and somebody knows you, they say, who are you? They say, I am a Vaishnava. I believe in Krishna. Oh, if you believe in Krishna, I would also want to believe in Krishna. I would also want to love Krishna because I see you. I know you. But not many people have this kind of philosophy. But this Raghavendra Swami, whatever little I know, I am not a big expert, but he would show some kind of miracles to attract people. And then when they became his followers, he would guide them onwards to the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, Lord Krishna. It seems he would move around sitting on a tiger. And just people would just get impressed just by seeing that he has his vahan in the form of a tiger. It seems when he was there, the Britishers were ruling India. So at one point of time, you know, after he took samadhi, his samadhi is there in Mantralayam. So he's there beneath the ground. So at one point of time, some Britishers, they thought that we don't believe in all this samadhi, we don't believe in this afterlife, we don't believe in these miracles and all that. So they wanted to probably take some wealth from that mutt or something like that. So some British officers, high level British officers, they visited the mutt. And the local devotees told them, he's still there. He's still living. He's not gone. So they said, okay, we would like to talk to him if he's still there. And one or two British officers, in seclusion, they went to his samadhi. And they honestly, you know, from their heart, they said, we really want to talk to you. If at all you exist, if at all you are not dead, please talk to us. So just like there is a story of a thief in Vrindavan, who heard in one Bhagavat Katha, there is a little boy called Krishna who is fully decorated with ornaments and he had no interest in anything else than the ornaments. So he said, oh, if there is a little boy and he is so nicely dressed, I would want to meet him and snatch away all the ornaments. But he didn't hear the whole story that this boy was visible 5,000 years back to ordinary people. So Prabhupada says, you know, shares this story of how this thief, he went to Vrindavan and in all eagerness, he's searching in the forest of Vrindavan. He Radhe, Vraja Devi ke chalalite, he Nanda Suno Kuta. Where is this Krishna? Where is this boy? I want to capture him. I want to steal all his ornaments. And when you have eagerness, it said, Krishna reciprocates. So Krishna appeared in front of him and he's saying, oh, you're that boy. Yes, I'm that boy. Can you give me all these ornaments? He got enamored by his beauty, so he is no longer interested in snatching them. Can you give me the ornaments? So what did Krishna say? Krishna said, I would want to give it to you, but my mother will scold me. So I can't give it to you. So in that whole conversation that happened between Krishna and that thief, you know, the heart melted, he was affected by that, and he gave up his profession as a thief. And after this whole incident, he came to know that this boy is not usually visible to people. It's my eagerness that pulled him. Laulyam, ekalamulyam. So similarly in this story, the British officers, they're honestly eager. Is he still there? So they went and it is said, this Raghavendra Swami, who's long gone, he actually spoke. He had a conversation with his British officers. And how did I come across this story? Some 5 or 6 months back, you know, there is the anniversary. When this conversation between the British officers and Raghavendra Swami took place, then they have marked that day in their calendar. Even now, we saw a photograph in the newspaper, 6 or 7 British ladies from that family, they still visit Raghavendra Swami's mutt in Mantralayam every year just to commemorate that occasion, that one great saintly person in India, after he has long gone, had a conversation with some of our predecessors. So even today, if you go to Mantralayam, that day is there when British ladies, they visit on behalf of their husbands. So there is this precedent of somebody in the Western world, we know Jesus Christ, when he is dealing with faithless people, many times in his teachings he speaks about have faith in the Lord, have faith in the Lord. That's one of his cardinal teachings, and that's why even today modern day Christianity is more or less based on putting faith. Faith is a very strong word in Christianity. Why? Because he's dealing with faithless people, and when you're dealing with faithless people, you're dealing with level zero. You're not dealing with level one, two, and so on. Adau Shraddha. That's where the whole process of spiritual life starts. So Vedic culture has so much Shraddha inbuilt. It is said, they just need a photograph to worship. Many times it does not matter which photograph you kept in front. You just tell them, this is a saintly person, this is God, and you should worship. And people start worshipping. Of course, this tendency to worship, this tendency to have a deity is exploited by some people. But from a spiritual perspective, if you meet the right person, if you actually come across the teachings of Bhagavad Gita in the holy month of Bhagavad Gita Jayanti, what great fortune. No arguments. What should I do? He said, Krishna has given us the Bhagavad Gita. Read the Bhagavad Gita, benefit yourself. Okay, I'll start today. Yes, you start today. So faith is an asset for some. Obviously, everything has its two sides. So, in the Western world also, we see that precedent of using miracles not to attract people to themselves, but through them to God. I had heard a story when I had come to devotional service of our great Acharya called Rasikananda. So Rasikananda Acharya, disciple of Shamanand Pandit, he preached primarily in Orissa. Even today, if you have ever known somebody from Orissa, simple-hearted people, very simple-hearted people. So Rasikananda Prabhu, when he was preaching there, I had heard a story that one time, one wild elephant came charging in his direction. And he just told that wild elephant, no, you should chant Hare Krishna. And he chanted Hare Krishna. And this disciple, this elephant became his disciple later. And another story which I heard about Rasikananda Prabhu. So it seems he also kind of used some kind of magical exhibitions to attract people to the devotional service. Another story that I heard is he's brushing his teeth with neem stick. And as he's brushing his teeth with neem stick, one of his followers comes and says, Prabhu, my dear spiritual master, you always keep insisting about chanting Hare Krishna. What is so great about chanting Hare Krishna? Looks very ordinary. There's no magic involved. There's no jumping involved. There's no gymnastics involved. You don't hang upside down. You don't stand on your 2 feet. Not much magic involved. Just sit and chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, 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 Hare Hare. So what's so special about this chanting of Hare Krishna? So Rasikananda Prabhu, he understood. He needs some exhibition of power. So this is a story that I heard. I am happy to be corrected. He took that neem stick, put it in the ground. He just threw it at ground. And he, you know, that stick just went straight into ground. And he flew around in the sky, one round, came back. Again he took the stick, put it in mouth and said, continue chanting Hare Krishna. So the follower just kept, what was that? So he said, don't get into all these mystic perfections. Don't be hungry, don't hunt for miracles. The greatest miracle is change of consciousness. We can change our body, make it thin, make it fat. We can be fair. We can be dark. We can develop muscles and this and that. When Prabhupada was asked, so many Swamis have come here and they have performed their own miracles. What is your miracle, Swamiji? That's the whole USP of all the Swamis who come to America. What is Prabhupada's answer? Prabhupada says, my miracle is, I turned hippies into happies. It's a very simple line. But it's a very profound line. People who had no inclination to obey anybody. People who had rebelled. People who did not have any good habits. People who had stopped going to any religious place, even of their own local culture. Churches, synagogues. They have abandoned any symptom of civilized life. They don't stay at home. They stay on the streets. So for such people, who are rebelling against the establishment, who are rebelling against the government, they are saying, we won't go to Vietnam, because that time there was a drafting board. So it was basically rebelling against anything that the government was telling them, rebelling against anything that their parents were telling them, and such people who are totally distraught, they are actually angry. What did you give to us? You are giving us compulsion, you are giving us forcibly fighting on the other side of the globe. Vietnam is other side. Where is Vietnam? So you're forcing us, we won't do anything of that, we will do what pleases us. So they are out there on the streets, living their lives on the streets. Young girls and young boys. And to get such young girls and young boys whose primary foundation is rebellion, disobedience, and to get them to believe in a blue-colored God whose daily activities is herding cows and whose favorite instrument is a flute. It's actually very revolutionary. And then Prabhupada said, this is my miracle. One time he was traveling in a taxi cab. And the cab driver looks behind and sees his sannyas clothes, saffron clothes, and says, so you are a Swami, huh? That's how they talk. So you are a Swami, huh? Yes. So that means you have a lot of tolerance. Can you sleep on a bed of nails? So it seems somebody might have bragged about that. Some other Swami might have bragged about that. Anybody knows this story? So you can sleep on a bed of nails? So Prabhupada, in his usual disarming humor, disarms you. He says, I can do better than that. So what is better than that? Prabhupada said, you can put me in a room full of beautiful women and I won't get agitated. No effect. So look simple. But, tolerating pain on the bodily level, tolerating sometimes, it's possible for some people to tolerate insults. Very difficult for most of us. One of the things that keeps getting repeated in the Bhagavad Gita is how labha labhau jaya jayo, victory or defeat, in some benefit or loss, you should stay equipoised. Why does Krishna keep on repeating that? It's very difficult to be equipoised. What to speak of tolerating something as fundamental as lust. Lust is the reason why we are here. And lust is the qualifying factor for staying here. And Prabhupada said, I can do better than that. I can tolerate lust. I don't get agitated. When the cab driver heard this, the story he mentions, his eyes actually grew big. It took some time for this statement to hit him. Oh, really? That's interesting. So, seems that in our line, there's not much emphasis on mystic perfections, especially on the bodily level, especially on the mental level, flying, entering somebody else's body, as was mentioned. Dura, what is that? Parakaya praveshanam, on the shloka. Parakaya praveshanam, entering somebody else's body. What for? Why would you want to enter somebody else's body? So in one place it is mentioned, some yogis, in the course of their austerities, when their body becomes old, when their body becomes troublesome, then they leave that body and enter a young person's body. What for? So that they can do what they want to do through that body. And when that body gets old, they leave that body and they enter another young body. In this way, although they have controlled to great extent, they have conquered over, one could say, the bodily changes, which is again 2.13, Deho Nosmin, Krishna says, Kaumaram Yavanam Jara. They have kind of flouted this rule. But what for? The desire for enjoyment has not yet gone, is it not? So, many times in our parampara, in the bhakti tradition especially, why is there not so much emphasis on these mystic powers? Some of them had. Rishabdev had. So if you read Canto 5, it is mentioned how Rishabdev, we have some quote here. So in one of the shlokas it is mentioned about Lord Rishabdev. He was always absorbed in transcendental love. Due to this, all mystic powers automatically approached him, such as the ability to travel in outer space at the speed of mind, to appear and disappear, to enter the bodies of others and to see things far, far away. Although he could do all this, he did not exercise these powers. This is about Lord Rishabhdev. So there's so much to do here with controlling the mind. So unless you control your mind, you cannot have any of these mystic powers. And that's where the whole trouble is. Why bhakti yogis do not get too much into approaching the mind and trying to control the mind. One time His Grace Jananivas Prabhu and His Grace Pankajangri Prabhu visited our temple and we were having a brahmachari class. And at brahmachari class, usually brahmacharis means one of the most primary things in their life is their sadhana, their chanting. So in so many brahmachari classes, I have heard this, when some senior sannyasi is visiting, somebody will inadvertently end up asking, how do you control the mind while chanting Hare Krishna? And that day also they asked this question. And he gave a very interesting answer. He said, so the question is, Prabhuji, how to control our mind when chanting Hare Krishna? Our mind goes all over the place. So what is the answer? He said, are you a practitioner of bhakti yoga or are you a practitioner of dhyan yoga? So what is this answer? So he said, he continued, he's saying, we are all followers of bhakti yoga. We are not all followers of dhyan yoga. Dhyan yoga is meant, the whole thing is about dhyan, about controlling the mind, having the image of the Supreme Lord, seeing the Supreme Lord in the heart as Paramatma. Bhakti yogis are not concerned with controlling their mind. Bhakti yogis are concerned with serving. In parampara, there is service. Your spiritual master gives you some service. So he said, we are more concerned about doing service. And then he put it further. He's from Mayapur, so he has that strong Gaur Nitya mood. He said, Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda want you to serve them right now. Whoever you are. Do you have lust in your heart? Do you have anger in your heart? Do you have envy in your heart? Does not matter. Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda are calling you right now. Please come. There's so much service. Jara Dekha Tara Kaha Krishna Upadesh. This is the mood of Jananivas Prabhu and Pankajangri Prabhu dipped in Navadvip Ras. Does not matter. And in the course of serving the spiritual master's order, don't we have to control our mind? Does not the mind rebel when there is service given to us by our authorities? Don't we have to tolerate hunger on some holy appearance day of some acharya? Is it that we don't feel hungry? No, but it is the appearance day of this acharya. So we tolerate. Is it not? So there is this mystic perfection of tolerating hunger, tolerating thirst, tolerating pain. But yes, it's paining, but there is service. So what do? You stop service. You tolerate that pain and do service. Unless, of course, it's debilitating, it's killing you. But reasonably speaking, we all, in the course of serving our authorities, our superiors, have tolerated hunger, have tolerated thirst, have tolerated pain, have tolerated inconveniences, not only at the bodily level, emotional level. Two devotees working together, unless they are, you know, not just physical clones, but ego clones, their egos are matching, there will be clashes. So many times we hear how two devotees cannot get along each other. Why? We are trying to be devotees. We are sadhaka devotees. We are not perfected devotees. So I have my opinion and another devotee has his opinion. And both of us believe this is the best way to serve Krishna. So what do? If you keep insisting this is the best way to serve Krishna, you end up stopping the service. The service does not get done. So what do? Okay, we compromise a little bit, both of us, and we continue serving. So in the course of serving the spiritual master, we have compromised, obviously. Otherwise service cannot go on. So there is a space for tolerating on the bodily level, on the emotional level, on the ego level. One time His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj was saying how in New Vrindavan, one time, you know, he had service for milking the cows. And he was saying there was another devotee who also had service of milking cows. And due to some reasons, they did not get well along. So Maharaj was saying, both of us had immense love for Prabhupada. There's no doubt about it. Both of us were fully committed to the mission. Both of us had immense love for Radha Gopinath, Radha Krishna. But some reason, we could not get along each other. So what did we do? So he said, we decided mutually to milk the cow by sitting on the opposite sides. So he's milking cow from this side and the other person milking cow. She has four udders. So it's possible. So he said, for a good amount of time, we worked out a mutual agreement if we keep fighting, if we don't get well along each other, service does not happen. So you go on the other side, we don't get to see each other's faces, but service goes on. And then Maharaj added, because of this kind of a mutual agreement, based on a higher principle, to the spiritual master, to Krishna, he said, after those days in New Vrindavan, he said, myself and that devotee turned out to be the best friends possible. He said, when he was speaking, he was saying, even today we have the deepest, thickest friendship. But not based on having mutual likes and dislikes on the physical plane. We had one very strong like. What is that? Both of us liked Prabhupada, both of us liked our service, and both of us liked to be part of the mission. Serving. Yesterday we were speaking at one program and we were saying how Krishna is such a nice person, Krishna is such a broad-minded person, he gives service to everyone. So we were talking of service, we think, what service can I do? I am such an ordinary person, I have so many anarthas in my heart, and I have so much tendency to fight, create schisms. So the point was that, are we Arjun? Are we anywhere close to Arjun? No way. The character that he has, the commitment that he has, the obedience that he has, we are nowhere there. So then we said, in Mahabharata war, Krishna wanted to establish dharma. He gave a lot of service to Arjun. Is there anybody in the Mahabharata war who was employed, who was engaged in service of Krishna, by Krishna, sanctioned by Krishna, but he is not a very pure person? He is not somebody who is a very clean person. No bad habits, no sinful activities, no negative tendencies in the heart. Is there any example like that? So one example that we gave was, you know, there is an example of Ghatotkach. Ghatotkach is born in a demon body. Why is he born in a demon body? Because he is the son of a demoness, Hidimba. So Hidimba and Bhim did not want to marry Hidimba, but on the order of Kunti Devi. Kunti Devi ordered Bhim during their vanvas, said, if she is approaching you, you are a Kshatriya, you cannot deny, and you need to get married to her. So on the order of his mother, Bhim gets married to a demoness, a female demon. And then from their union, there is a demon son called Ghatotkach. So because he is in a demon body, and he is associating with demons, because he didn't associate with his father. Father and all the Pandavas are left. So he had some demoniac propensities, but one good quality is, you know, just like Jananivas Prabhu and Pankajangri Prabhu are saying, they said, we want to serve. Whoever we are, right now, Gauranita is calling us, spiritual master is calling us, serve, with whatever limitations we have. Where is there a count of our qualifications before we get service? Even if it is not very prominent. Do you want to serve? Yes, I want to serve. Enthusiasm is what counts. Utsahat. So Ghatotkach, one good quality that he had, in a myriad of all the other things that are bound to him because of his body, because of his sinful demoniac body, is that he wanted to serve. Is that he had a lot of affection for his father, for his superior, Bhim. So he heard somewhere that my father is busy in a war, and there's a huge army on the opposite side, and probably I can do some service. So he approached Bhim. And he got a service. And what service did Ghatotkach get? Karna is breathing every moment of his life to kill Arjun. That's the goal of his life. So he has kept a secret special weapon called a Shakti weapon. And it is only for one purpose. For the final target, Arjun. And Krishna wants to avoid all these complications. Why do we get into that complicating situation? We simplify it before it happens. So Krishna gave this service to Ghatotkach. You conquer, you advance against the Kuru army. So here is this huge bodied demon, just by walking on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he is killing people. So suddenly in the middle of the war, when everything is going on as per plans, there is a catastrophe. There's a red alarm. Somebody goes to Duryodhana and says, do you see what's happening? It's no longer about your bows and arrows and missiles and mantras. And all. You basically have to exist. You have to save yourself from being trampled. And then you can chant your mantras, and then you can shoot all those Shakti weapons and all that. So Duryodhana goes to Karna and says, my dear friend, I know you are going to be glorified in Kali Yuga as the best friend. You know, you are loyal to your friend. I would want an expression of your loyalty to your friend. I want you to shoot your Shakti weapon against this Ghatotkacha. He says, no way. I am a loyal friend as long as your demands don't conflict with my ambitions. Till that time, I am a very loyal friend. Let people sing about my loyalty to my friend Duryodhan. But not when it counters my ambition to kill Arjun. He says, please, I fall at your thorny feet. Please shoot this weapon because we have to survive, we have to live to fight with the Pandavas. So, lot of convincing. And then Karna is forced to shoot the Shakti weapon at Ghatotkach, and Ghatotkach is killed. But along with killing of the Ghatotkach is also killed the chance that there will be a confrontation between the greatest archer Arjun and also another great archer Karna. And that was a big confrontation that Krishna wanted to avoid. So Krishna gave service to somebody in a demoniac body with demoniac propensities just because he wanted to serve Krishna. There's another story which we would like to quote. You know, there is this example of Shikhandi. So Shikhandi is Amba from his previous life. How do you kill somebody who cannot be killed? Who has Ichha Mrityu? Bhishma. There's only one way. Because he's a Kshatriya, because he knows what has happened in his previous life, he can recognize Amba, who is reborn as Shikhandi. She had a lot of vengeance in her heart. So she had taken a vow, I'll burn my body in this life, but next life I come in a form and I'll make sure that Bhishma, Devavrat, dies. So she is born as Shikhandi, but in this body of Shikhandi, she is neither male nor she is female. So usually in a Kshatriya battle, in a Dharma Yuddha, they don't have a space. But Shikhandi wants to serve. So yes, she has service. Amba has service. And what is service? Her service is not to fight. Her service is to go and stand in front of Bhishma on the chosen day. So Shikhandi is given service. What you do is you fight, but you stand there and seeing the face of Shikhandi, which reminded Bhishma of her previous life as Amba, Bhishma said, because she is a female, I cannot fight with her. And he gave up his weapons. And when he gave up his weapons, then Arjun shot arrows and that's how Bhishma fell down. So why are we quoting this story? We are quoting this story just to tell you, does not matter whether you are pure, does not matter whether you are a great, amazing, committed person like Arjun, you may be Shikhandi. Do you want to serve Krishna? Do you want to serve Gaur Nithai? If yes, they are calling you. Would you like to, somebody says, I am lusty, I am greedy, I have so many negative tendencies in my heart. You could as well call me demon. You could call me Vritrasurdas. But Krishna is saying, even Ghatotkach, if he wants to serve me and my devotees Bhim, I am giving him service. So this is something where I feel, we could come up with some reconciliation between what our acharyas are saying and what, you know, is shown by some examples in this world of some emphasis on controlling the mind. Some of our devotees had been to Udupi, South India, and in Udupi there are local sannyasis there. So one senior devotee and one senior brahmachari, they both visited a sannyasi in Udupi. And when they were talking, again this question came, how to control the mind while chanting Hare Krishna? And this Udupi sannyasi, exalted sannyasi, he said, actually 99% of spiritual advancement is based on controlling the mind, mind management. If you can learn how to manage your mind, then more or less your job is done. So there's a lot of emphasis on mind management, is it not? In the Bhagavad Gita, 2.55 is the first shloka where Krishna starts answering. When Arjuna asks him the question, what are the symptoms of a self-realized soul? Can you please describe to me? So the first shloka that Krishna speaks is a very interesting shloka for our discussion today. He says, Prajahati yada kaman, prajahati. Jahati means give up. How? Exclusively, he is immediately ready to give up. Prajahati yada kaman, sarvan partha manogatan. Atmani eva atmana tushtas. Sita Pragyasta Duchyate. So Krishna starts his description of a Sita Pragya, of a good devotee, by one symptom. What is the symptom? He says, this person who is a Sita Pragya, he very soon very strongly, he gives up all desires. But he's qualifying those desires. Yada kaman sarvan partha manogatan. Manogatan means exclusively those desires are given up that are born out of the mind. Man mein jo utpanna ho rahe hain, wo ichhaon ko bhali bhati ye jo yogi hai, wo tyag deta hai. Puri tarah se tyag deta hai. But why does he qualify manogatan? Why does not he say prajahati yada kaman sarvan? Because all of us have some desires. Now, desiring is a symptom of consciousness. It may come through the mind. Who can desire? A dead person cannot desire. Only a live person can desire. That's why the path, one of the prominent religions in this world, insists on destroying your desires. Make your desires zero. And it is considered to be an atheistic religion. Why is it considered to be an atheistic religion? Because it is negating the basic symptom of consciousness. The basic symptom of consciousness is having desires. But what Krishna is mentioning in 2.55 is, do not give up desiring. Give up desiring those desires that come, that arise, that are born in the ever fluctuating mind. There is a yatra and some students want to come for yatra and the student is asking me, during that period when the yatra is there, when the IYS yatra is there, I have committed to a social work somewhere in Gadchiroli. There is some social project where some doctors are required and is already committed there and is asking me, now there's a question in front of me, should I go to that social opportunity to serve or should I come for this IYS yatra? So I asked him, how would you set your priorities? It's not a question of telling him directly, you come for IYS yatra, because when he comes there and if he's not convinced, what will he do around? He'll sit behind the last person and he's missing all the classes, he's not participating in the kirtans, he's not doing any service there. So physically there, but mentally absent. So then we were discussing with him and then we told him, essentially what you're asking him is a question of priorities. So I told him, in such situations where there are two conflicting, check whether this opportunity that you want to opt for can come again. Is it repeated? So that social service opportunity that you have, can you do it the next month? Can you do it 6 months later? And this IYS Yatra 2019 that is going to Tirupati Dham, will that come again? So if something is not going to come again, makes sense to choose it. And something that can come again, you can take it up later. And then we were speaking how essentially this kind of questions will come in every sadhaka's life. Should I do this? Should I do that? Right now, should I chant or should I read? Because long time, I have not read. And I keep reading so many Prabhupada's quotes. Please read my books. I have put my heart into my books. And devotees keep insisting. He stayed up in the middle of the night just to give us his books. And people are foaming at their mouths just completing their chanting rounds. So what do you do? So then you have to understand, is there something that can be done later and is there something that needs to be done right now? Question of priority. So we were discussing how basically this is a question of a conflict between the mind and the intelligence. And when you follow your mind, what do you get? You get sukha. You get happiness. But again, it's fleeting. And when you follow your intelligence, when you follow your brain, what do you get? You get satisfaction. Satisfaction is a much deeper happiness. When you see somebody satisfied, it's not that he's all the time having his, you know, the mouth is extending from this ear to this ear and you can see all his teeth. But when you look at somebody who's satisfied, one thing you can understand, nothing can disturb him. Neither happiness nor distress can satisfied. Atmani eva atmana tushta. But to become atmani eva atmana tushta, what did Krishna mention? Prajahati yada kaman sarvan partha manogatan. He's not asking us to give up all desires. It means we have to ask ourselves, which of those desires that I am desiring right now are born in the ever fluctuating mind? And which of the desires that are born are actually emanating from the spirit soul? And if we can distinguish between them, we will need a strong intelligence. And strong intelligence comes from reading scriptures or hearing from those who have read scriptures. So is chanting important? Yes. Is reading scriptures important? Yes. Is associating with devotees important? Yes. Is serving devotees important? Yes. How do you do this? Again, it means you know, it's not so easy to say that only this is important, that is not important. We will have to refine our intelligence. We'll have to sit with Vaishnavas. We'll have to chart out. Every single one of us has to decide what is important for me right now at my stage in life. I'm 25, what is important for me? And somebody is 35, he again needs to ask, 25, when I was 25, 10 years back, I asked you what is important for me, and you told me this is important for me. And I don't know why, but last 10 years, I took that instruction that was spoken to me at a certain stage in my life as the eternal instruction, and I kept on following that, but I feel I need a revision. I need an update. Would you give me another instruction? And then comes another instruction. I spoke that when you were a student. I spoke to you that when you were unmarried. I spoke to you that when your primary concern in life was this. And now your age has changed, your social situation has changed, now you're no longer in that situation. Now I would like to give you this advice. Now the most important thing for you is this. And again 10 years later, you're in another situation. Yes, life goes on. Again we'll have to sit with some senior devotees and ask them, you told me that instruction that time, you told me that instruction this time, and today I'm in this situation, would you like to revise your instruction? And again, probably there's a revision in instruction. So that desiring to serve, desiring to always be in touch with devotees and do what is necessary at that moment, that is the fluidity that all of us need. We don't need fluidity in obeying everyone and anyone and obeying all the desires in our heart. We need to have a clear demand. So we need to control our mind as much as is necessary to obey our superiors. As much as is necessary to obey Prabhupada's instructions, what does he expect from us? That much mind control is super necessary for us. It's not that we kick out mind control just because that is the primary stage for mystic perfections. No, we require mind control, but we don't delve into it as the primary goal of life, just like the yogis do. Just like Jananivas Prabhu and Pakajangri Prabhu said, are you a dhyan yogi or are you a bhakti yogi? But anukulyasa sankalpa, pratikulyasa, whatever is favorable, that much mind control we need to do. So when there is an opportunity to do some social service, you do it. But if it is conflicting with a spiritual enlightenment, do not allow it to conflict it. Social service can be done later. But an opportunity to go to a holy place with holy devotees at the right time, hearing the katha there, is something that cannot be missed. So mind control is necessary, not as the goal of life, but as a tool. So that we keep associating with devotees in the right mood. Not just associating physically, sitting close to them, but not in the proper mood. So with these few words, we will end here. And in the Manashiksha, we had one reference here. The first three verses are just some exhortations to the mind. My dear mind, please, it starts with Guru. Guru Goshtha Lae Shu. So the first thing that Srila Raghunath Das Goswami in his Manashiksha. Manashiksha is a set of shlokas, a set of prayers, that is instructions to the mind, because we are discussing about the mind today. So first three verses is saying, please worship Lord Krishna, please worship Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, please worship Roop Goswami, Swarup Damodar Goswami. And then the fourth shloka he says, my dear mind, give up all useless talk, mundane gossip. And he says, even talks of liberation, impersonal liberation. That's against the concept of service. So give up all that. Then text number 5 he says, if lust, anger and greed etc. are troubling you by binding you with the ropes of wicked deeds, call out to the great devotees of the Lord who are like great warriors. You cannot free yourself from lust, anger and greed, but there are great commanders of the army of Lord Krishna. Very interesting that he does not ask us to call out to Lord Krishna. He asks us, he is asking the mind, call out to the great commanders in the army of Lord Krishna. He said, they can free you from the lust, anger and greed. Hearing your piteous cries, they will surely help you. Sri Raghunath Das Goswami is telling us. And then in verse 6 he says, somebody will say, actually I conquered lust, I am a very pure person. Still, I am feeling some unhappiness inside. Then he says, actually, probably now the problem is not lust, anger, greed. Probably now the problem is deceit and hypocrisy. Pretending to be somebody whom you are not. So he's calling it the trickling ass urine. Why are you bathing, O mind, in the trickling ass urine of deceit and hypocrisy? So it's very harsh. Wake up call. And then in shloka number 7, we wanted to focus on this. He's saying that somebody will ask, I already conquered lust, anger, greed, which is ruling everyone. And why is there these traces of deceit and hypocrisy in my heart? So the answer is given in shloka number 7 of Manashiksha. He's saying, why? Because there is still some hope for pratishtha. You want to become famous as a great sadhu. You want to be known among devotee circles as a senior devotee, as somebody who's been around for a long, long time. So that pratishthasha, as long as it is there in your heart, he's saying, till that time deceit and hypocrisy will be there. So now what do? This is the last. So he's saying, always remember and serve the immeasurably powerful commanders of the army of Shri Krishna. I really like this word, immeasurably powerful. Because Krishna is definitely immeasurable, aprameya. You cannot measure Krishna's, is infinite, Karuna Sindhu. What about the commanders in the army of Lord Krishna? They look very ordinary. Sometimes they seem to be affected by old age and all. But Raghunath Das Goswami says, call out to the immeasurably powerful commanders of the army of Lord Krishna, the great acharyas, the great spiritual masters, and tell them, go and confide your heart to them in privacy. It's not possible to confide such matters in public. But tell them, I'm suffering a great deal. Would you like to help me? And they're all there to help us. So that much mind control we have to do. What is that? To control our mind and approach some senior devotee, to approach the spiritual master, Shiksha, Diksha Guru, Vartma Pradarshak Guru, and tell them the sad state of affairs of our heart and get some relief, get some medicine and advance on the path of bhakti, ready for doing service wherever it is necessary, whatever extent it is necessary, sometimes suffering inconvenience also. So thank you very much for your patient listening. Srimad Bhagavat Mahapuran ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Ananta Koti Vaishnavrinda ki jai, Jai Nitai Gaur Premanande, Hari Hari Bol.